The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A edition, the version of our show where we answer your questions with our answers. That sounds a little odd, but we'll go with it today. We've got some email questions that have come in this past week or two on a variety of topics, actually. Jim was kind of mentioning a few of them. So we've got quite a diversity of questions we're going to get to today. And I'm sure there'll be at least one Social Security question in there, but... last couple of weeks, they've been a little thin, which is refreshing because before the end of the year, this last year, we had nothing but Social Security questions. So welcome, everybody, to the show. And Jim's about to share the first question, assuming...
I still have bronchitis.
I get it. Here's some more cough drops.
That might help. You might as well chuck one of the two of those over here.
There you go.
But there was one of our clients was in early, you know, don't mention any names. You were chatting with him. He is a physician's assistant, and he gave me the pleasure of knowing that my bronchitis could last like 8 weeks.
Easily.
Yeah. Hmm.
We have all that to look forward to on the show here.
Yeah, exactly. Eight more weeks of... But fortunately, the coughing comes indiscriminately. In other words, not very often.
Mm-hmm. We'll see.
Hopefully. All right. We got a bunch of different questions. Let's start getting our way through this. We are recording this on an odd day. I will say that much. It's a Friday afternoon. Usually I'm on my way home just about now, but we've had a hell of a week in the office, and we fell far behind. So
just
here we are.
Trucking right along.
Trucking right along. Yeah. Well, if we missed a Q&A show, if we missed any shows, we have disappointed listeners. Okay. So this came in from someone we'll name George because we always protect our listeners' anonymity. And we call everyone George, even though they gave us his real name. But he is from the state of Florida.
Very nice.
Fine state. It's where Mom is. Mom left yesterday for Florida again.
Oh, good timing. It's freezing.
Yeah. Not in Florida, is
it? Well, where she was, it was.
It was for a week.
Super freezing.
Yeah, she was in Florida, and then she went back to Massachusetts. Now she's back in Florida.
Don't blame her.
Oh, she hates the winters up in Massachusetts now. She's ornery when it comes to those. Okay, so this came in from a gentleman who asks, on your September 22nd show, you, and I don't know if you means me or you, you said not to spend from your bucket three if the portfolio value has dropped below the opening value. I think that was me who said that.
Maybe.
What is this value? Is it the value on the day I retired? thanks, George in Florida. And I changed his real name to George. Mm-hmm. That's a good question, George. And it differs. Once again, bucketing is a strategy. It is not a universally accepted fact or given. What's the word I'm looking for?
There's no standard way.
Standard.
There's a lot of flexibility. It's very subjective, meaning there's variety of ways you can put your own spin on bucketing.
Absolutely.
So there's not a one hard and fast rule.
And what I tell our clients who are involved in bucketing, when it comes to bucket three, for those who don't know, comes after two and before four, brilliant, isn't it?
Brilliant.
Bucket one would be your cash-like bucket, folks. This is a spending strategy. It's not an investing strategy. Bucketing is about spending. And for those who don't know what we're talking about, when you retire and you are now consuming and spending, a strategy a lot of people utilize, Chris and I included, is called bucketing. We believe in bucketing your fun expenses. We call them desires. I try to call them fun expenses. Desires, a lot of people don't know what that means. But fun expenses. And we believe in covering your minimum dignity floor expenses, which are essentially, remember, folks, groceries, at smallest to largest, would be groceries, utilities, transportation, which is the maintenance, upkeep, and replacement of one vehicle. Two, three, four vehicles would be a desired or fun expense, but one vehicle is a required expense, part of your minimum dignity floor, as well as transportation and health care. We believe in covering those with lifetime guaranteed secure income. I won't bore you on that. That's not what he's asking. So Chris and I had taken the assumption that he has bucketed or is now trying to spend, Chris, on his fun things. He took care of his minimum dignity floor items. Mm-hmm. So we believe in looking at your spending over a 6 to 10 year period, which is the typical length of a phase. There's three phases of retirement you're going to go through: go-go, slow-go, and no-go. And in those phases, your minimum dignity floor expenses stay fairly static. They will increase at a steady, methodical rate for their individual inflation. But you are always going to have grocery, utility, transportation, housing, and healthcare expenses. There's not much ambiguity or variability in them. But in your fun things, there's a whole host of variability in there. And a lot of movement in those expenses. You are going to spend far more on fun things in the go-go phase than the slow-go and the no-go. So once you put a good plan in place, and you need the data from the plan, before we started recording, Chris, we were talking, again, don't mention any names, mm-hmm. about a person we're helping on some bucketing, mm-hmm. and you mentioned he's going to be, I hope, something to the effect of, I hope he appreciates all the work was getting the numbers, not putting them in our spreadsheet.
Right.
Because our spreadsheet that creates a bucketing plan for someone is rather boring if you look at it. But it was all the data of getting those good numbers. So once you get those good numbers, folks, and once you say, okay, I now want to spend on my fun things, whether you're in the go-go, slow-go, and no-go phase, the whole idea of bucketing is positioning your assets so if your investments fall, you have a certain amount of, we call it capacity, risk capacity, or spending capacity, in reserve, that will allow you to keep spending, Chris, if your bucket one or cash bucket runs out. You then have bucket two, which we call principal protected assets, and it might represent another 3 to 8 years of spending money. And then you have bucket three, which is your investments. And this is the one that the listener is asking about. And we say bucket three, it's not filled, at least Chris and I's approach to bucketing. Other advisors have different approaches. To us, you don't necessarily spend chronologically, bucket one, bucket two, bucket three. When bucket one runs out, you evaluate two and three. And you spend from three only if you are not confronted with a loss in your assets, that your investments in there, because they're the most volatile assets. Bucket three in our bucketing strategy is the most volatile. So if they're down, you don't want to sell something that's down 10, 15, 20, 30%. Mm-hmm. And spend the proceeds right. of that.
And that's the justification for the buffer. That's why we call it buffer assets, bucket number two. It buffers you or protects you from being forced to liquidate assets when they're down in value. It gives you that choice. So to kind of maybe simplify what he's thinking here.
Hey, you're saying I'm
not
complex?
You. No, the listener who sent in the question to simplify kind of what the question is itself. On a yearly basis, when it's needed, you're going to assess whether it's a good idea to liquidate out of bucket three or tap into bucket two. And because you've built both of them side by side, if you will, you have that flexibility. A lot of the things, if people have been paying attention to how we recommend you approach things, this whole concept of flexibility keeps coming up.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about diversifying your tax situation. And here we got a bucketing situation. It's really at their root the same benefit, which is giving you the flexibility to do what's best at the moment. If you've only got one choice, then you're forced into executing something when it might have been a really bad idea. You wish you could have done something else. If you create a plan where you can make these changes on the fly, then you'll be able to adapt. And you kind of have to have that, because I don't care how good you are at forecasting or making a plan, your plan for the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years is not going to be what you planned 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago. As things unfold, they're going to be different than you expected. The best way to accommodate that is to build in flexibility to your, quote, plan. And this bucketing is exactly that. It's giving us the flexibility to tap from buckets that behave differently when it's advantageous to us.
Absolutely. Oh, to the client.
Us meaning the person with the plan.
Meaning,
yeah.
Yes.
Us. Yeah.
So his question is, bucket one has run out. He has to refill it. Mm-hmm. He's going to bucket three. You skip two. He's got mm-hmm. that part right. Doesn't mean he's going to skip it totally. He's looking at bucket three. And I said on the show, don't spend from bucket three if the portfolio value has dropped below the opening value. Let me explain a little, because I also said on that show, unless you are actually consuming principal. We've mentioned that in the past, that some people, they have no choice. We know they have to consume principal. Mm-hmm. Now, I would spend bucket two long before bucket three. But what I'm getting at is, when you look at bucket three, you could, if you are looking to protect, let's assume a totally different, you're not going to consume principal, Chris. You say to yourself, I've retired, I've got $500,000, and I never want to spend any of it. This money is all going to my beneficiaries, or this money is all going to go towards my long-term care protection or something like that. Mm. You're not going to spend any. So you're never going to dip below $500,000. There are some people who put that type of hard lock mm-hmm. on some of their assets. Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, if that is you, if you're in that extreme case, and your $500,000 is now worth $475,000, and you have to refill bucket one, obviously you're not going to spend.
Mm-hmm. From three.
From three, because right. it has breached the $500,000. You don't want it to go any lower than $500,000. You are only going to sell if it's interest, dividends, or a cap gain. Mm-hmm. You're not going to consume principal. But you can have other situations. Another situation could be you retire at $500,000. That's your beginning value after setting up your bucketing plan. And now you're 3 years into retirement. You have to replenish your cash pool. You have ample assets in your buffer asset, bucket two. But we always say you first go to three, you actually skip over two, and let's say your 500, Chris, has grown to 550. Mm-hmm. So it's actually appreciating. Mm-hmm. In our bucketing assumption, you can take that 50,000 of capital gain, because that's reinvested. Interest and dividends, in our opinion, are no longer reinvested in your bucket three investments. They feed into your cash bucket automatically. But you could take $50,000 if you wanted of gain back to 50. In other words, harvest that 3 years of gain. You don't have to dip into principal. Unless your retirement analysis, Chris, is based and predicated on, you do need to consume principal. Right. But now you can consume principal, folks, kind of on your terms, not Wall Street's. And I hate using that Wall Street as a descriptive, as if there's some evil group of cigar-smoking men just waiting to take your money, even though most of them are. But what I'm saying on that, Chris, is if you know you have to consume principal, maybe you'll consume that $50,000 and the first tranche of the amount of principal you feel comfortable spending. Well, gee, I'm going to also consume in positive years another $20,000 a year for 10 years. I'm going to consume $200,000 of my principal. That's part of my plan so I can have a really fun go-go phase. I'm going to consume $200,000 of my dollars because I know I can't take it with me. Well, it's always wise to consume that, Chris, when it's still worth $200,000 and it's not now worth $180,000 and I got to sell and come up with $20,000.
Let me take a crack at explaining it another way for people. What Jim is describing there is maybe as part of your plan, your bucket three was assumed over that 3 year period to go from $500,000 down to $400,000 because you were going to be using it up to do the stuff that you want to do. It was all part of the plan. Now, if your bucket to take out that $100,000, you know, $500,000 down to $400,000, you're thinking, oh, I'm planning to take out $100,000, but in those 3 years, it dropped to $450,000. It would be probably unwise, and the reason for having the buffer assets there, for you to go and take out $100,000 because that's now going to put you down to $350,000 instead of what you were planning it to be, which is $400,000. So you think of this trajectory of assets as they're going to decline if your plan is based upon you consuming assets over time, not just kind of maintaining or growing, but consuming them down. What you don't want to do is harvest indiscriminately, take out money like you planned without paying any attention to the fact that it also went down in value. You don't want to combine those two. It's when you combine those two that accounts run out very quickly. Thus, the buffer asset. In this case, you might want to seriously consider, I said that the account dropped 50, you were planning to take out 100, so you only take out 50 from the box number three. Bucket three, and then tap 50 out of your buffer asset, saying, I'm going to buffer myself so I don't damage my bucket number three excessively. I knew it was going to go down by 100 over 3 years. That was all part of the plan, but I don't want to make a choice I can avoid that would push it down to 350 instead of the 400 that was part of the plan.
Exactly. And then the final thing that we run into are people who start with 500,000, Chris, and they want to try to grow that account, not just maintain as the original example I gave. I want this $500,000 to always be there. Some people want that money to go and grow. Mm-hmm. Now, we've crunched numbers for these people, and they have enough pension income, Social Security income. They're covering a lot of their expenses. They're in a position where they can actually grow their assets. Most people have to consume, at least consume, until Social Security is in full swing at age 70. For people who are delaying Social Security, which we spend a lot of time counseling on because we're actually proponents of that, when people delay Social Security, they have to consume, Chris. And maybe their bucketing changes over time. They may be in a consumptive bucketing plan from 60 to 70, say, and then the numbers are showing, or the projections are showing in our analysis, that from 70 on, they can actually grow.
Right.
Because the excess Social Security now and the reduction from go-go to slow-go in their fund spending, both of those, the reduction in desired spending and the increased Social Security, is reducing what needs to be debited. So they may change mid-retirement and go from a consumption bucketing plan to an accumulation plan. And in an accumulation plan, you look at the value of your bucket three at the date of the last debit, not the date you started. So if you're trying to maintain $500,000, that value, or whatever value you set it at, hey, I want to maintain $300,000. So you might spend down to $300,000. But if that is the value that you want to maintain, obviously you're never going to spend if it's below that, mm-hmm. because your aim was to maintain it. But if you're looking to grow it, and if it went from $500,000 to $560,000, and you spent 30, half the growth, down to 530, that becomes your, and you say to yourself, this is, I'm locking in half of my capital gain, not all of it. I'm going to consume half, lock in half. That becomes your new floor, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So when the next period of spending comes, and if it's below 530 but above 500, that person may not spend from bucket three.
Right.
Whereas someone who wanted to maintain just at 500, maybe they had 530 the week before, now they need money and it's down to 520, they're still willing to take that 20, they just don't want to dig into the five. Am I explaining right. that part right?
Yeah, essentially. Why don't you read his question again, and then I'll answer it now that we've said all this, maybe in a way that clarifies it.
Oh, so I guess he's implying because of my bronchial cold.
No. There's just, for some people, that was a lot of... lot of examples.
We'll summarize it again. Mm-hmm. On the 922 show, you said, not to spend from bucket three if the portfolio value has dropped below the opening value. What is the opening value? Is this the value on the day I retired?
I'm not positive you said the words opening value. I think more...
No, originally. Opening. Oh, I didn't
it's
say
possible.
Opening?
It's possible. I think a better word, even if you used opening, it would have been better to say the original value you thought it would be.
I might have used the word original.
Maybe original value.
He put opening.
Right. And maybe you said opening. I think original is more accurate for our intent. Essentially, we have an original assumption for what that bucket three balance should be over the course of your retirement, over the course of the period when you're bucketing. And you're going to pay attention to that, and you're not going to withdraw money if your trajectory, if reality turns out to be worse off than what you thought it was going to be. That's kind of that example where you thought it would be 400, turns out it's only 350, you're not going to touch it. You're going to go to the bucket two buffer assets. But that original value you thought it would be might be a better way of thinking of that. That's the benchmark. That's the what you're going to compare to make the decision of should I tap three or should I go to my buffer assets and avoid three right now because I'm on an unfavorable trajectory.
Perfect.
Good question, though.
Good question.
People are paying attention to the details.
Let's get to a shorter mm-hmm. question because
yes.
we're going to wrap up the show shortly. Okay, that's 922. Hi, Jim and Chris. Mm-hmm. My friend, Georgette, something tells me, longtime listener, fake mm-hmm. name. My friend, Georgette, is from Peru, but is now a U.S. citizen. Mm-hmm. She has a very large 401k at work with her family still living in Peru, all as the beneficiaries. How would it work when she passes away? I know what happens with a U.S. citizen, but how would it work with a foreigner?
That's a great question. Because the 401k is never, the taxes have not yet been paid. That's the big thing that the IRS and the government here in the U.S. are going to be worried about, is that taxes be paid on that income that was deferred and put in the 401k. So you wouldn't pay it out. The Uncle Sam is not going to like it if that gets paid out to Peruvian citizens who don't pay U.S. income taxes on it. What did our fine friends say on that? Because I honestly do not know exactly what would happen in that case.
Excuse me for trying to eat a cough drop and talk at the same time. Well, believe it or not, there's nothing that prevents a non-U.S. citizen from being a beneficiary on a retirement account. It all comes down, we've talked about this on previous shows, Chris, tax treaties.
Right.
You have to look at tax treaties. Okay. Now, there could be different withholding rules, but it all is going to come down to tax treaties. Who taxes it, the U.S. or the other country? Mm-hmm. And you have to go to the IRS's website. Now, I have a long link for that, but I think, and I don't want to read this link because no one will be able to make heads or tails out of this.
No.
But if you Google United States income tax treaties, and in fact, the document that the IRS has is called United States Income Tax Treaties A to Z. So if you Google that.
Angola to Zimbabwe.
So, I don't know. Perhaps. No. There's going to be very few Z's. If you Google that, it will tell you if that state has the tax treaty. If there's a tax treaty, it would be that state that does the taxation, that state.
That country
mm-hmm. that will do the taxation. But if there's no tax treaty, then you could have both countries ultimately taxing mm-hmm. the account.
Because that's generally what the treaties have worked out, so that there isn't this double taxation when there's two governments involved. So most of the time it's some kind of a agreement that one or the other will tax it.
So mm-hmm. when you go to that website... Mm-hmm. I'm going to quote from that website. This is the IRS's website on United States Income Tax Treaties A to Z. Just Google that. If the treaty does not cover a particular kind of income, or if there is no treaty at all between your country and the United States of America, you must pay tax on the income in the same way and at the same rates shown for the applicable U.S. tax return. Hmm. And interestingly, Peru is not on that list.
No treaty?
Hmm. It's not on the A to Z list. Now, maybe they skipped P in the alphabet. Maybe the government was closed down when they were writing that part.
Mm-hmm. So that means there's a potential for this to be a bad tax situation for these beneficiaries.
So
depending on how Peru, I don't know the tax laws of Peru. That's why I said earlier, I don't know the answer to this question, how it's going to work out. But it's possible U.S. is going to take their bite, and then Peru is going to take their bite as well.
Now, what I would encourage this listener to do, because Chris and I are by no means experts on tax treaties and mm-hmm. Beneficiaries who live in foreign countries, but there are advisors out there. They're called cross-border financial planners or cross-border investment advisors or even cross-border attorneys. I know a ton who specialize in Canada and Mexico only because they're two obvious countries, and as well as England and many, many different countries in Europe. I am certain there are Central America, if not one specific to Peru. There is definitely Central America ones. Google cross-border tax planning, cross-border Peru advice, something like that. And your friend, depending on the size of her 401k, if it's large enough, if there's only a few thousand dollars in it, she may not want to bother.
But what if it was large. It was very large, yeah.
Okay. Well, then she may want to bother.
Yeah.
And find a cross-border specialist in Peru or for Peru. Could be an American-based planner who works with Peruvians or a Peruvian-based planner who works with Americans. But these people, that's their specialty. That's their niche. Just like Chris and I niched our practice to specialize in retirement planning, these advisors niche their practice to specialize in these situations. But you can often find advisors, not just a general cross-border specialist. You can find one specifically for the country you're looking for if you just Google it.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Okay.
So I'm surprised Peru's not on there, but...
I was too.
Yeah, because there's a lot of countries with tax treaties.
And it was the Ed Slot Group that told me Peru was not on there. I didn't proof that myself, so they could have made the mistake. If Peru is on there, we'll throw the Ed Slot Group under the bus. How's that?
Okay, sounds good.
Okay. We already answered that question. So how many minutes have we been doing this?
31 almost.
All right, I think I got one more quickie. Mm-hmm. All right, this one is a little odd. I think we can do it quick.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily mean odd, but it's a question that I just don't think we're going to be able to answer with any definitivity. It's well, I'll read it and you'll see. Okay, so this came in from a George from Kansas. Fine state of Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
I may be receiving a large inheritance. Can you help me figure out the best way I should use it? It's not something you have talked about much on your show, but it might be interesting. Do you want to tackle that one?
That's the whole question?
Yeah, that was it.
George, that's a little too wide open. I have no idea what you would like to do with it, what you'd like to accomplish with it, how you're receiving it, how much it really is. A lot of details before we could give any kind of specific suggestions.
You could give it to financial advisors.
As I say, there's an obvious choice.
You could give it to a financial advisor who looks like George Clooney.
Or one that doesn't.
Or one that doesn't. But I read it, and I wanted to talk about this question only to let this listener know we're not being facetious. It is impossible for someone to tell you what to do with your money. I have a saying here in the office. We manage assets in this office. A lot of people know, even though we don't talk much about asset planning or even the asset management we do, we have a chartered financial analyst who works for us named Travis. We've recently hired another investment specialist who's going to be coming on. His name is Scott. Unlike Travis, Scott is local, so he'll probably be on the radio more. Well, actually, Travis hasn't been on at all, so I guess one visit to the radio is more than Travis.
True.
But I have a saying in the office that I have preached repeatedly to Travis, and I will preach repeatedly to Scott. How can I or any competent financial planner tell you what to do with your money until I know what your money has to do for you? Do not put the cart before the horse. Don't just say, hey, I've inherited this money. I'm going to go buy this product with it. Or I'm going to go invest it in this investment. Or I'm going to go blow it because it's free money. You should begin with a plan. That's what you need to do, listener. Begin with a plan, whether that plan is one you created or one that another person has helped you create. Anybody who leads in with how much money do you have, how much money are we talking, and starts to lead in by saying, well, you need to buy this, that, and the other thing, or invest the money this way, that way, and that way, and I'm going to charge you X percent to do it for the privilege of managing your money. If that's what they're leading in with, I would be very cautious on that. I don't care if you're inheriting $10,000 or $10 million. It should begin with a plan. And figure out what that money needs to do and what you want it to do. How do you want to fund the rest of your life? Do you want to stop work early? Do you want to give some of that away? There's so many elements here, Chris, that need to be looked at. I don't want to start listing and we'll be here forever. Mm-hmm. But instead of asking us what to tell you to do with this inheritance, I don't know what you should do with it. I don't know if you're in debt up to your eyeballs. I don't know if your wife needs some special medical care. I don't know if you are overweight and maybe you should go on that long health, what do you call it when you go away for health?
A retreat?
A retreat or whatever it is. You go somewhere and they make you better and out you come. whatever. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if you should take that money and invest it in your health is what I'm saying. I don't know if you need to help family members. I don't know if you love your job and you don't want to quit, or you hate it and you'd love to quit tomorrow. I need to know more about what you want to do so I can figure out now what your money has to do for you. Then a competent advisor can tell you what to do with your money. Mm-hmm. Maybe it could be put just in the bank. Maybe you should give half of it away. Maybe you should spend it all. There are so many missing elements here. You should begin with a plan. If you inherit some money, now let's keep things in perspective. If you inherit just a few $1,000s and you know you still have to keep working, it's not enough to change your life, I wouldn't spend it all, but I would say, okay, I'm going to take 10%, 15%, 20%, whatever it is I'm saving for my retirement, I'm going to put that away. And then the rest I'm going to go spend and have fun with. Mm-hmm. And also, what are the wishes of the person who left it to you? Did they leave any final wishes? Did they specifically say, I want you to do this, that, or the other thing with it? I guess I wanted to chat about that a little bit, Chris, to point out that, we're financial planners, but we can't just assume, read one email from a listener, one-sentence email from a listener, and say, you should do this or you should do that. And if there's any shows out there that you're listening to or any advisors out there you're listening to, and their answer is, oh, God, yeah, here's what we do. Everybody who comes into this quote-unquote free money, man, do we have a product for you. This product is going to do this, that, and the other thing, and only that's going to slice your bread and polish your car at the same time. And they're going to start touting some sort of investment or insurance product or something that they want you to buy from them. Or they're going to come up, Chris, with something that sounds impressive. Hey, now that you have money, you are now eligible to invest in a business development corporation. How would you love one of those? And wow, that sounds impressive. Or they'll come up with something. I'm going to put you in a non-traded, non-public REIT with an interval redemption strategy. Wow, yeah, it's only available to high net worth people, and I'm going to put you in that. And also, I just named two items out there, folks, that have commissions up the yin-yang for the people selling them. And they're just going to be spouting out these impressive-sounding investments that are nothing. If anyone is leading with the product before the plan, replace that person. Remember, how can I or anyone tell you what to do with your money until I first know what your money has to do for you?
Perfect. So that's a good wrap up to this show this week. We'll have another moderately short show next week as well. But
this is because Chris is leaving.
I'm going to be gone for a week, so we have to knock out two shorter shows today instead of one longer show.
On a Friday afternoon, folks, I should be driving home right now.
It's still 3-something.
353.
So I want to thank everybody for listening. Remember, we are living, breathing, practicing financial planners in Northern Colorado, although we work with folks throughout the nation. If you're interested in finding out if there's something we can do for you, specifically with your retirement plan, which is our niche, please reach out to us at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, HELPS.com. On there, there's a variety of ways to contact us, or you can even just directly schedule what we call a coffee and a second opinion, where we'll talk to you and find out if there is something that our skills can help you with, some questions we can answer for you. If there's something that we can't help you with, we'll do our best to direct you to the resources that can give you a hand. But we really appreciate everybody listening, and we'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier and Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.